Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast. I want all of you to understand that I have an audience tonight. I have to apologize to our regular RBN audience who is very educated and very well informed and has been with us for a very long time. Thank you, CFR. I hate the FBI.com too. caught me off guard with that one. I'm sorry. But for all of our folks out there that are very knowledgeable, you have to bear with me because I am bringing in to the fold people who have not yet been exposed to a lot of the information that we share on RBN all the time. Sometimes people ask me, why are you still sharing this? This is, you know, old material. Folks, I have a job to do. My job is to bring people from the state of being asleep to being awake. Then they're on their journey. Then I can shove them off into the water and out into the ocean. But we do have, and I've been reaching out to folks that just this week that have no clue. They still have heard nothing about any of these issues, any of this evidence that we have about 9/11, about Building 7, about the people that were arrested that day, about the missing money. You have to understand that there's a new generation that's coming up. It wasn't around then, like you and I were. We have an obligation to share with them and to teach them the truth as well. It's very important. So I ask you to suffer along with me. You can go to rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com, 1-800-313-9443. Call in if you'd like. Make a comment if you'd like. Now, many of you remember back to the missing money. I like to follow the money. I take this as an aspect of criminal investigation. Now, we know what's going on in the Middle East right now. That's about insane. But let's take a step back. Clip 3 illustrates to you one of the neocons that were not only in charge of this money, but the two places in all of the United States that the records were kept regarding certain transactions were at Building 7 in New York City and in the Pentagon, the exact spot that got hit by whatever it got hit by. Mike, please roll clip number 3.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
$2.3 trillion with a T.
$2.3 trillion with a T. Now roll clip 4.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And now number 4. And number 4 is Rumsfeld Senate committee. So be aware of that. This is a good one.
I get tired of saying that defense is to be made an excuse for wasting dollars. I don't believe we should pay 1 cent for defense more than we have to.
I seriously question an increase in the Pentagon budget in the face of the department's recent Inspector General's report. How can we seriously consider a $50 billion increase in the defense budget when DOD's own auditors, say the department cannot account for $2.3 trillion in transactions in 1 year alone.
It is, I was going to say terrifying. It is such a monumental task. I have met with two former officials of the Pentagon who served in the budget and controller and those areas. And I've mused over the fact that I've read some of these things and asked what they thought.
We process nearly 10 million paychecks a month. 10 million times to get things screwed up. I've had my pay screwed up 6 times since I've been in the department. And it's really bad when you screw up your boss's pay.
I doubt, to be honest, that people inside the department are going to be capable of sorting this out. I have a feeling it's going to take some folks from outside to come in and look at this and put in place a process that over a period, and I regret to say, but I've seen how long things take, I think it's going to take a period of years to sort it out. I think it'll probably take the cooperation of the Congress to try to get the system so that you can actually manage the financial aspects of that institution rather than simply report on things that have happened imperfectly.
There's more oversight over the Head Start program than there is over the entire military budget.
It's a terrible record, and it's preposterous that the Defense Department doesn't know what's happened to this money.
This situation's a disgrace. It tells me that we can't meet our constitutional obligations to the taxpayers of our country to make sure that things are honestly and legally spent.
They were told major cuts in education programs, and then we read, well, you know, $500 million is paid per year that isn't owed.
It is an incredible thing that we arm the world and then turn around and come to Congress and say, look at all these weapons out there. They're almost superior to ours. They're comparable to ours. Well, of course they are. They're ours. We sold them to them.
Since the end of the Cold War, we've sold more military weapons than the rest of the world combined.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
My name is Jack Shanahan, Vice Admiral, U.S. Navy, retired. One of our nuclear bombs blows up Hiroshima 15 times over. 5 devastates Russia. After that, this is how many the U.S. has left. I feel safe reducing nuclear weapons. Do you?
I have had many people for the past several days ask me why I feel the way I feel about an upcoming attack. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to explain to you why, and this is just a short answer. I'm going to be putting out an article soon on rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com why I feel this way. I see a lot of the same signs and symptoms that happened long ago. Pre-planting of stories, and I shared with you just one tonight. Just one from the New York Post. There have been several that have come along, and I've scratched my chin, and I've said, well, I don't think they'd be that stupid again, but folks, let me tell you something. You know, there are people like Bill Cooper that did them some real credibility damage. So I'm going to be honest with you. I am trying to get out in front of the storm. And I don't think that I myself am worthy or loud enough to be able to do that, which is why I ask all of you to share this information with other people. I don't need to be right. We just need to prevent the same insanity that happened on November 11, 2001. And I see them setting up the boogeymen again. And this, what's his name? Ayman al-Zawahiri is just one of the many, 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 many people that these folks set up to do just that type of thing. Remember the Israeli that they put out? Remember him? Put out all of those Islamic extremist messages. He ended up being an Israeli. I don't trust any of these folks as far as I can throw them, and I see the same patterns lining up. And I would really like to avoid that kind of insanity. So it's just one of those churning feelings in my gut. Take it for what it's worth. I went on the record tonight, and you know what? If I'm wrong, thank God. Thank God I'm wrong, if I am. So what we have going on now is militants caught filming staged chemical attacks in Idlib after the United States puts out a warning that if they conduct chemical weapons attacks, we will immediately blah, 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 blah. And while that warning is going out, militants have been caught filming staged chemical attacks in Idlib. They are creating a pretext for war. So on September 11th of all days, the U.S.-led coalition and the United States-backed Syrian Democratic Forces announced that the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, is kicking off a military operation to eliminate the ISIS-held pocket of Afrin in the Euphrates Valley. According to a coalition spokesman, the SDF ground advance will be blocked up by coalition air and artillery strikes. Backed up by coalition air and artillery strikes. Afrin and nearby villages are the only remaining major ISIS stronghold in Syria, which the terrorist group actively uses to carry out attacks on the eastern and western banks of the Euphrates. Previously, the SDF repeatedly announced that it is going to clear the pocket. However, by September 11th, no real efforts had been taken in this field. The Najin pocket is seized by the SDF. The U.S.-backed force will finally be able to declare the eastern bank of the Euphrates free of ISIS, at least technically. They will. More than 100 United States Marines were sent as reinforcements to the U.S.-led coalition garrison in the area of Tanf, according to a September 8th announcement by the Pentagon. Many MSM sources described this move as a self-defense effort amid the growing tensions between Russia and the United States in a war-torn country. On September 11th, the Russian Center for the Syrian Reconciliation in Syria stated that militants have already started filming a chemical weapons attack. A chemical weapons attack in the city of Jazir al-Shagur, in the province of Idlib. According to the information received from inhabitants of Idlib province, militants are now filming a staged provocation in the city of Jisar al-Shagur, where chemical weapons are depicted as being used by the Syrian provocation in the city. The film crews of several Middle Eastern TV channels arrived in Jisar al-Shagur in the morning, as well as the regional affiliate of one of the main American television news networks, the center said. The plot reportedly envisages staged scenes showing members of the White Helmets. Folks, there they are again. The White Helmets. Oh, the saviors. White Helmets. You can't make this stuff up. The White Helmets pretending to help civilians after the Syrian army allegedly used the so-called barrel bombs with poisonous substances. Oh, Lord have mercy on our souls, eh? Lord have mercy on our souls. It stinks to high heaven. So anyway, for those of you out there that are tuning in to the first time that may not understand the significance of these things, there were 240 Israelis arrested in the spy ring, the largest spy ring in American history. Here in the United States, they were deported. They were deported. You had two separate vans that were pulled over, one filled with explosives and one filled with a bunch of intelligence operatives in New Jersey. I've spoken to the officer personally and can assure you he has no dog in the fight. A long time ago, but I spoke to him personally. And even after all of that happened, you had Bernard Kerik. Bernard Kerik. What a great guy he was, huh? Bernard Kerik, the head of the NYPD, and then on to Homeland Security, and then on to Federal Penitentiary, Bernard Kerik, who is in clip number 5 responding to certain questions regarding that incident. Please roll clip number 5.
And word late tonight that two suspects are in FBI custody after a truckload of explosives was discovered around the George Washington Bridge. That bridge links New York to New Jersey over the Hudson River. Whether the discovery of those explosives has anything to do with other events of the day is unclear, but the FBI has two suspects in hand, said the truck load of explosives, enough explosives were in the truck to do great damage to the George Washington Bridge. But they arrested the two suspects and they're questioning them as we speak.
ABC's John Miller, I gather, has just heard of an incident in New Jersey.
The New York City Police Department has a report that the FBI is responding to New Jersey because a truck reportedly loaded with explosives has been stopped by authorities on the road there, and the men with that truck have been detained. Members of the Joint Terrorist Task Force, according to the New York police officials, are responding to question those people. I want to underline that all the phones to police headquarters and to the FBI from here seem to be disabled. So sorting through these reports to get specifics to sort them out can sometimes take time, but this is information that is in the possession of the police department, comes from the FBI, and we don't know the exact significance of it.
Okay, thanks very much, John. Well, I guess it's also clear to people now that ABC News is going to stay on the air for an indefinite period of time. Of the people we asked.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Diana Williams with Bill Ritter. We interrupt ABC's coverage right now because we have late-breaking information about an incident at the George Washington Bridge.
Commissioner Bernard Kerik of the NYPD talking now. Let's listen in.
Thereby closing down 14th Street South in southern Manhattan. This will include, or relate to, All pedestrian and vehicular traffic, except essential emergency vehicles and personnel, shall be prohibited in the following areas: Manhattan south of 14th Street, and that will be from East River to the Hudson River. The only vehicles that will be allowed in those areas will be emergency vehicles, police, fire vehicles, National Guard, and anything authorized by the police department. There will be some vehicles in the morning that will have to get down there for deliveries of certain things that we're familiar with already. They will be allowed in, and residents. That's it. Anyone trying to violate the order will be arrested and could be found guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. I urge people to follow the order. There's no need to come into Southern Manhattan tomorrow, and as a result of the order, the best thing to do is stay away.
Can you talk about this incident that came up on Channel 2 about some people coming across the GW Bridge explosives? Can you comment on that at all?
Well, I haven't seen the report, and I haven't heard about anybody coming across the bridge with explosives. Okay.
Have you heard anything about the ban on the Justice Act?
Well, I've heard basically the same thing you have. We have
liar, liar, pants on fire.
They weren't near the bridge, to my understanding. If it in fact did happen, we're trying to confirm it through our detective bureau.
One more question on this.
South of 14th Street, that includes all bridges and tunnels crossing south of 14th Street. Closed down for
any movement south of 14th Street.
And you have not heard about any explosives on the George Washington Bridge or in the Lincoln Tunnel?
No.
Commissioner, it was in Jersey near the bridge. Is that your understanding? Do you know the jurisdiction?
Well, what we heard was Port Authority police stopped a van that might have had explosives in it. We haven't been able to confirm it.
All right, pause that.
We're working on.
Pause that for a second. It did not might have had. We listened to the 911 recordings. We went back and listened to the 911 recordings. This is the cover-up, ladies and gentlemen. When police find explosives, they don't say, hey, well, we think we found some Play-Doh that we found in a van that we think that might be. No, they found explosives. And it went out on the police radio. We have all of the radio transmissions, and we've listened to them ad nauseum. This is Bernard Carrick lying to the American people, because once they realized who it was they got, because this was the oops. Folks, I've had so many people that have told me regarding 9/11, it was so big of an operation, so many people were involved, that you know they couldn't have done this without making mistakes. You're absolutely right. They could not have done it without making mistakes, and they made them. They made them in that there were men and women of the Port Authority, of the NYPD, and of the New Jersey local police there where these other three idiots were, that were put onto this situation so fast, and they reacted, and they took into custody Israelis that were working for a company called Urban Moving Systems, who's, by the way, owner all of a sudden up and left and disappeared back to Israel, closing his company overnight. Now, keep in mind, he's in New Jersey. He's not in New York. He could have kept his business open. He could have continued to generate revenue, but up, gone, closed doors. Bing, done, that's over with. Oh, how we have been duped for so long. How many years now we are past this, and we still have got to drum the truth into the next generation. Go ahead and roll the rest of that clip.
on it.
Bernard Carrick.
When we hear something, we'll let you know.
That's on the Jersey side, right?
It's on the Jersey side. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And we'll be back, so we don't have to go through okay. this. How long? I'm hopeful.
Okay, what you have just seen there is Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick not confirming any reports at this point. Reports that we have heard that there was a truck loaded with possibly explosives near the vicinity of the George Washington Bridge, and he said that those reports have not been confirmed.
The police department
are checking on it right now.
You heard John Miller tell Peter Jennings that he too had heard this from Port Authority sources. Again, Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick not confirming that anything had happened or any threat to the George Washington Bridge. We'll keep you posted.
Well, thank you. And again, our apologies to our viewers about 5 minutes ago, but we do have an established connection now with CNN's Deborah Fairwick. The reports we're getting now, two or three men arrested on the New Jersey Parkway. Deborah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. That is the information that I'm getting from two sources, that there was a van either on the New Jersey Turnpike or the Garden State Parkway, and that it was near the George Washington Bridge. There were two or three men who were in the van. The van was pulled over. It is not clear why the van was pulled over, but when it was, law enforcers found tons of explosives inside of the van. That is right now all I'm hearing, but again, two to three people in custody, and we are trying to get more information on that right now.
Deborah, I don't mean to put you on the spot here. Do you know where on the Jersey Turnpike this was, how far from New York City?
We do not know that. We are looking into that. There is one report that it was on the New Jersey Turnpike. There is another report that it was very close to the bridge, if not on the bridge. So again, these details all emerging, and we're trying to piece them together. But that's what we've got so far. Two to three people in custody right now found with a van filled with explosives.
All right, well understood.
The other report that we wanted to ask you about, earlier we had heard that an FBI spokesperson said that there was a report on the George Washington Bridge, which is another facility which you folks are responsible for policing, a report that there had been a van stopped there that had explosives. Have you, the Port Authority Police down here, heard anything about that?
I have received no reports on that particular incident, and there's nothing that has been brought to our attention to that effect.
And how can I resist clip six? Ladies and gentlemen, my evidence as presented if I were an attorney, which is I am a judge's son, so I can't help but present a case every time I present a show for our listening audience. Roll clip six. Truck bomb.
I got a message on that plane. It's a big truck with a mural painted of an airplane diving into New York City and exploding. I don't know what's in the truck. The truck is in between 6th and 7th on King Street.
King Street and Liberty, ladies and gentlemen.
So, urban moving systems. Discovered in a van, white van, that had checked positive for carrying explosives. And they were caught videotaping the collapse from their van in Liberty Park. It just seems like they must have had prior knowledge of not involvement.
They could have had prior knowledge.
And it's easy to put a truck bomb, as we did, as happened in London, and happens in Iraq or Israel on a weekly basis.
It's easy to put a truck bomb, as we did, as happened in London.
Thank you.
The FBI has now put out a nationwide APB, all points bulletin, for a white Chevy van with New Jersey registration. Written on the back is Urban Moving Systems. Apparently there are three male occupants. Let's repeat that. The FBI has now put out an APB, an all points bulletin, nationwide. They're looking for a white Chevy van with New Jersey registration, and written on the back of the white van are the words Urban Moving System. Apparently this van is carrying three male occupants. Obviously, if you see this van, you're asked to contact the FBI immediately.
I grabbed my binoculars and I could see the towers from my window. And this is where I'm looking. And all of a sudden, down there, I see this van park. And I see three guys on top of the van. And I could see that they were like happy. You know, they didn't look shocked to me. You know, they didn't look shocked.
There was a group of Israelis, some of whom later were revealed as Mossad assets, who were arrested after cheering and high-fiving and videotaping the crash of the airplanes into the World Trade Tower.
I just happened to see the van and, you know, hollered over to my lieutenant. You know, I think that could be the van. We checked it out, and it was. You know, we were all on edge, obviously, so I really wasn't looking to make friends with these people, and neither were the officers that I were with. Once we started talking to them, you know, they were pretty much like, hey, you know, we're not against you, we're with you.
And at that point, we were taken for another round of questioning, this time related to our allegedly being members of Assad. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event.
Our purpose was...
And word late tonight that two suspects are in FBI custody after a truckload of explosives was discovered around the George Washington Bridge. That bridge links New York to New Jersey over the Hudson River. Whether the discovery of those explosives had anything to do with other events of the day is unclear, but the FBI has two suspects in hand, said the truck load of explosives. Enough explosives were in the truck to do great damage to the George Washington Bridge. But they arrested the two suspects and they're questioning them as we speak.
The reports we're getting now, two or three men arrested on the New Jersey Parkway. Deborah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. That is the information that I'm getting from two sources, that there was a van either on the New Jersey Turnpike or the Garden State Parkway, and that it was near the George Washington Bridge. There were two or three men who were in the van. The van was pulled over. It is not clear why the van was pulled over, but when it was, law enforcers found tons of explosives inside of the van. That is right now all I'm hearing, but again, two to three people in custody, and we are trying to get more information on that right now.
Deborah, I don't mean to put you on the spot here. Do you know where on the Jersey Turnpike this was? How far from New York City?
We do not know that. We are looking into that. There is one report that it was the New Jersey Turnpike. There is another report that it was very close to the bridge, if not on the bridge. So again, these details all emerging, and we're trying to piece them together. But that's what we've got so far. Two to three people in custody right now, found with a van filled with explosives.
The New York City Police Department has a report that the FBI is responding to New Jersey because a truck reportedly loaded with explosives has been stopped by authorities on the road there, and the men with that truck have been detained. Members of the Joint Terrorist Task Force, according to the New York police officials, are responding to question those people. I want to underline that all the phones to police headquarters and to the FBI from here seem to be disabled. So sorting through these reports to get specifics, to sort them out, can sometimes take time. But this is information that is in the possession of the police department, comes from the FBI, and we don't know the exact significance of it.
Spencer, I got a message on that plane. It's a It's a big truck with a mural painted of an airplane diving into New York City and exploding. No one's in the truck. The truck is in between 6th and 7th on King Street.
All right, 10-4, I'll send the issue in the bomb squad there for Whiff King.
The four? Before I got Whiff message? Put a mural painted, airplane diving into New York, blowing up. Two men got out of the truck, ran away from it. We got those two under.
Good.
And
you got those? Are you holding those two guys, Kate? Let's get them under. Let's get them out of them. All right, listen. You need any further on those two guys over there? You all right over there, Kate?
We have both suspects under, Kay. We have the suspects who drove in the van exploded. We have both of them under, Kay. Let's get some help over here.
Now, I'm sending you an issue there. I just want to make sure you and your guys are all right over there, Kay. That's all.
What's the location of that, Kay?
Put them up. You know, we have both Beltrans driven that exploded. Resurrect?
What location? The location, Kay. Look, you ready that?
That's the 10-4, sir. Oh.
I got location.
King Street between 6th and 7th.
Dean Street, then 6th and 7th Avenue. Dean Street
between 6th and 7th Avenue.
Which unit is on the scene on King 6 or 7? Which unit are you, King?
Captain Calamuso on
the scene. Central evacuate. What's that?
Explosion.
Which unit is on the scene on King Street, King?
On the air. Yeah, Wolf, switch over to 8.
502? CIT units on the air, CIT.
They caught a bus? Like, a buck or a truck?
A van full of bombs, guys.
Oh, no, somebody said there was a truck that had a picture of the World Trade Center with a plane flying into it. Oh, they caught it.
Damn.
By now, I think it should be abundantly clear that Urban Moving Systems was in fact a Mossad front company. It was run by a known Mossad operative named Dominic Suter, who fled back to Israel after initial questioning from FBI investigators. In June of 2001, months before the terrorist attacks, Urban Moving Systems was given over a $498,000 business loan, which would never be paid back. You're probably thinking to yourself at this point, this is pretty damning information. Why was there no investigation, and what became of all the Israelis that were detained before, during, and after 9/11? The reason there was no investigation has to do with Israel First, Zionist, and key political positions. Representative Jane Harman was the chairwoman of the Homeland Security Subcommittee on Terrorism, and she was instrumental in seeing that there was no investigation into Urban Moving Systems. Michael Chertoff at the time was Assistant Attorney General, and as head of the Criminal Division of the Justice Department, he made sure all the detained Israelis were released back to Israel on minor visa violations. He would later go on to be the second head of the Department of Homeland Security.
When everything the American public believes is a lie, I know we will have succeeded our objectives or something to that effect. William Casey, thank you for reminding me about that, Zap. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are new to this information, what you may not realize you've been listening to are the police recordings of that day, November 11th, 2001, when there were several vans that were detained. Thank God to the efforts of law enforcement that had no idea about the covert nature of this operation. They really didn't. They really did not have any idea. Yet they responded and they acted quickly. East Rutherford Police Department. I spoke to that officer. I'll never forget that conversation. He has no dog in this fight. He's not anti-Semitic. He doesn't care about whose religion, faith, culture, or anything else. All he knows, he was doing his job that day. He pulled these guys over. They were Israelis and people that deny that this happened that way are fools. They are fools. Absolute fools. Do not be fooled. Do not be fooled. So Bernard Carrick came out of prison and he had this epiphany. Oh, how prisoners are being treated so horribly. This is a guy, by the way, who ran a prison and Homeland Security and the emergency operations there. Everybody saw during 9/11. But he had this great epiphany, and of all networks he went out on, it was Vice News, the same leftist organization that interviewed me about scopolamine and the idiots, the psyop wackadoodles at the Bundy Ranch that went and killed two cops in Las Vegas that we kicked out. Vice News did an interview with Bernard Carrick on the prison system. And I want to close this show out with you listening to exactly what this criminal scumbag who had to go into federal prison, one of the cushiest prisons that there were out there, experienced and saw for himself. This is clip number 7. Please roll Mr. Bernard, the felon, lying, cheating, conniving Carrick.
We take people we're angry at, and we put them in prison. Prison should be for people that we're afraid of. You know, you go to prison, you learn how to steal, cheat, lie, manipulate, con, gamble. And most importantly, you learn you have a verbal disagreement with somebody, they got to get cut. Is that really what I want back on the streets of my community? No.
Not so long ago, it would have been hard to imagine that Bernie Carrick would be advocating for criminal justice reform. That's because for nearly 2 decades, his job was putting people behind bars. He served in the New York Police Department and as a corrections officer, and eventually ran Rikers Island Penitentiary, before becoming New York City's top cop. But prison changes a man. That's something Carrick found out the hard way in 2009 when he was sentenced to 4 years in a federal penitentiary after pleading guilty to 8 felony charges, including corruption, tax fraud, and lying to White House officials. The reason he was talking to White House officials in the first place is that in 2004, President Bush nominated Carrick to head the Department of Homeland Security.
Bernie Carrick is one of the most accomplished and effective leaders of law enforcement in America.
Just a week later, Carrick withdrew his nomination over questions about the immigration status of his nanny. And as we now know, that turned out to be just the beginning of his problems. We first met Carrick in 2008 when he was in the middle of his battle with federal prosecutors. He was calm, cool, and collected, if not a bit bitter.
Every cockroach will come out when you're down. They don't have the balls and they don't have the courage to attack you up front.
Now, after serving 3 years and 11 days in a minimum security facility in Cumberland, Maryland, he says he sees the way we punish people in a whole new light. He started a nonprofit organization working for criminal justice reform and has written a book about his time in prison called From Jailer to Jailed.
Here, hold the book. Hold it.
Our criminal justice system is supposed to treat everyone equally, not to insult anyone in here, but if you believe it does, you're either stupid or naive.
We went back to Carrick's house in Jersey to find out if he really is a changed man.
So you go to prison for 3 years, during which time you seem to have a revelation about the criminal justice system, and you come out and you have a new book and you start a nonprofit. And I mean, you've pointed out that being a convicted felon limits one's career opportunities. America loves reformed sinners, and this is, you know, just basically one of the few careers you can go into. Is this opportunism, or is this a sincere change of heart for you?
One, the coalition for criminal justice that I've created, I haven't made a dime from. Not a dime. Nothing. In fact, I think at most I've had 2 train tickets that it's paid for me to go to Washington out of probably 60 trips. Number 2, for me to make any money for my book, real money, I'd have to sell more copies than the Bible. It's not happening. This isn't about money. This isn't about opportunism. This isn't about none of that. This is about flaws and failures that I saw within the system, myself, that I think have to be changed. And there are people that will say, why do we listen to him? I think you listen to me because I've run 2 of the biggest law enforcement organizations in this country, and I've also been on the inside. No one with my experience, my background, and my success has ever been inside.
Can you give us some specifics in terms of what you learned being in prison versus, you know, career fighting crime?
The one thing that a cop or a law enforcement executive doesn't see and doesn't understand is the destruction that the system causes to individuals, to families, to children, especially children. You don't see that. You know, you're focused on one primary function, and that is to enforce the laws of this country. You want to take the bad guys off the street, and I've done a lot of that, and I did it really well. But then I went to prison. And when I was in prison, I met young black men charged with a conspiracy, 10 years. They didn't have any drugs on them. 15 years, 5 grams of cocaine. I met commercial fishermen that caught too many fish. They're sitting in federal prison. I met a young guy that sold a whale's tooth on eBay. They put him in federal prison. And I came to realize very quickly, there's a whole bunch of people in prison that didn't necessarily need prison to pay for their mistakes. We have evolved into a society that we take people we're angry at and we put them in prison. Prison should be for people that we're afraid of. You know, you go to prison, you learn how to steal, cheat, lie, manipulate, con, gamble. And most importantly, you learn you have a verbal disagreement with somebody, they got to get cut. Is that really what I want back on the streets of my community? No.
So can you tell us a bit about your time in prison?
There were 300 people in the camp where I was. The reality is, a minimum security camp is pretty much an unsecure facility. The doors are open. There's no locks. There's no fences. You're there basically on an honor system. You have one or two COs that control the compound. You have a counselor in the building only for 8 hours during the day. And then the rest of the day, those inmates in that building are on their own.
For most people, what, you know, sounds like white collar prison, club fed, that sort of thing. It doesn't sound like a
here's what
really
I suggest.
Incredible
here's what
punishment.
I suggest.
Yeah.
Those people on the outside that say it's a white collar facility, it's club fed, it's, you know, it's a cushy spot. The Ritz-Carlton is a pretty cushy hotel, probably one of the most cushy in the world. Go to the Ritz-Carlton. Walk into the bathroom, which is probably bigger than my cubicle. Lock yourself in there for a year and come out and tell me how cushy it was. That's nonsense. The only people that would find a minimum security facility cushy is somebody that just came out of a medium or a maximum security facility. I don't think anybody understands how profound freedom is. The lack of freedom for someone that's never experienced it is far more profound than you can even explain. You live in an environment that is completely stagnant, and your whole world around you goes on without you in it. Your kids grow, they graduate from school, and then you have major family events that happen, like you have a death in your family. And there ain't a damn thing you can do for your family. My brother-in-law died while I was in prison. He was 50 years old, and there wasn't nothing I could do to help his wife. All I could do was sit on the other end of a phone and listen to my wife and all my family in the background screaming and wailing and crying. And it makes you hate the government. It makes you hate society in general. We're paying for guys to sit in a minimum security camp and do nothing but work out, read, and play games. To me, that's pretty stupid. We're turning them into morons. That's what we do. We're turning them into morons, and we're paying for it on top of it. The BOP, by law, has to give you programs to reduce recidivism and rehabilitate you. ACE programs, they call them. Okay, we had 18 when I was in Cumberland. And out of those 18, I'll give you a couple. Chess, checkers, quilting was an ACE class. Are you kidding me? Navigating eBay.
Navigating eBay?
Navigating eBay. There were no computers. But there's a more important, a far more important issue. They're supposed to be learning something to reduce recidivism. He's a convicted felon. He can't get a job.
Let's talk about that. I mean, what does that label convicted felon mean to you in your case? I mean, how has that changed your life?
Forget my case. Convicted felon, anyone that's convicted of a felony in this country, it's a black cloud that hangs over you until the day you die. Your debt to society is never paid. You are punished until the day you die.
But punished in what ways?
First of all, your possibilities of employment are 70 to 80% diminished based on your conviction. I know people with master's degrees, doctorates, and bachelor's degrees that can't get work because of that conviction. And then you take these young kids that come out of the ghetto, they don't have a college degree. They don't have a high school degree, a lot of them. Even if they get it inside, you know, I used to teach a life lessons class, and the kids would come to me and I would push them to get their GED. And they would look at me and they'd say, listen, I'm black. I'm a convicted felon. I'm doing time for drugs. I can get all the degrees I want. I'm never getting a job. And the unfortunate, sad thing in life is he's right. He's right. At what point does a person pay his debt to society? The Constitution says the punishment must fit the crime. In this country, the punishment does not fit the crime.
But isn't the threat of prison also designed to deter these crimes in the first place?
There's a whole bunch of people in prison today that made mistakes not knowing they were committing a crime. We're putting them in prison, turning them into criminals for ethical violations, for regulatory violations, for civil violations. We turn them into convicts, and then we guarantee that they're personally and professionally annihilated, where they can never come back into the U.S. workforce again. That's not good for America.
I guess here it sounds like you're separating out kind of white-collar crime versus violent crime. So basically arguing that those who have previously demonstrated some value to society should be subject to a different set of rules than others.
No. The reality is everybody should be subjected to the same rule, but they're not. And we've seen that in black and white incarceration for drug crimes. Blacks go to prison for longer sentences, 6 times more than whites. How's that possible? Why is it possible? Why is it allowed? On violent crime issues, we have to protect society. You know, put those people in prison. But you know how many drug offenders, first-time, non-violent, low-level drug offenders are being sentenced to 10, 15 years? They never had a problem with the law before? That's absurd. It shouldn't happen.
So, but what's the alternative then?
There's a number of alternatives. A commercial fisherman that catches too many fish, suspend his license.
But that case is, I forget the gentleman's name, you refer to him in the book. I mean, you make it sound like he just kind of accidentally caught too many fish, but he was convicted of...
I don't give a damn how many fish he caught.
But it was like a poaching, he was a poacher, right? I
mean, right, first of all, there's a couple issues. The commercial fisherman that catches too many fish, if he accidentally caught the fish or he intentionally caught too many fish or whatever the case may be, there's a way to deal with it without turning him into a convicted felon. Suspend his license, fine him, hit him in the pocketbook, take his fish. Take his fish several times. Make him do community service. Make him do something. But we don't do that. We take a whole bunch of those guys that catch too many fish, and we turn them into convicted felons. And you know what we do? We take the boat. We take his license forever. Forever. So he's punished forever. The guy started fishing at 17. He's now 55. It's the only thing he's ever done in his whole life. So we guarantee for the rest of his life, not for that 18 months he's in prison, for the rest of his life, he can't do the only job he knows. He loses the boat. The 6 people on the boat lose their job. The wife loses the job. And it goes on and on.
Right. I mean, let's take 2 examples. You have Joe the fisherman who accidentally caught too many fish and is in
violation
of the
Lacey Act. Ladies and gentlemen, I think you get the idea. Bernard Carrick, after going to prison, after being one of the nation's top cops, all of a sudden had a revelation. One that we've been trying to tell people for a very long time. Victimless crimes should not be prosecuted. That is my final good word of the day. For all of you who hung in with me in chat, I thank you. Thank you all for listening. Please share this episode with your friends. God bless you. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio Broadcast. Tom Lacovara Stewart.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner.
there. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.